When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey gang, today's guest is guitarist and lead vocalist Brandon Hardesty from the Annapolis, Maryland punk reggae rock band Bumpin' Uglies. Together we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the song Island Time, taken from their 2019 EP Buzz. The inspiration for the tune comes from Brandon's wife and her family, and the island they would always go to and spend their summer vacations. Eventually, Brandon would go there too, and one time in particular, he was holed up in their cabin with an injury. While everyone else was out enjoying the sand, sun, water, and adult beverages, and with nothing else to do, Brandon grabbed an acoustic guitar and wrote Island Time. He knew he wanted to tell a story, putting his spin on all those tales he had heard from his wife and her family. The track was produced by none other than Howie Spangler from Ballyhoo, and mixed by Ryan Cullen, who not only knocked it out of the park mix-wise, but he also laid down some killer percussion. So for all this and a whole lot more, sit back, grab a cold one, and let's enjoy some Island Time.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Brandon, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Are you in Annapolis, Maryland as we speak?
I am, yeah.
You are? Okay. You know, as researching for this episode, I was surprised. I did not know you're from Annapolis, which is home also to Ballyhoo. Who knew that that area of the country would have this many beach-inspired, reggae-infused punk rock bands? I didn't.
Yeah, we've been really close with Ballyhoo over the years just because of that. There's really not a lot. There's more these days. There's definitely a new generation of bands that have kind of started coming up. But when I started doing it, Ballyhoo was really the only band, and they helped us out a lot over the years.
Right. And you guys have just continued to make a name for yourself. Your first full-length, Free Candy, was released in June of 2011. From 2012 to 2014, you released more studio albums and a live record, followed by the release of three EPs in 2015 and 2016 while continuing to tour. And the song we're going to talk about today, Island Time, is from the band's fourth EP, Buzz, which was released on October 4th, 2019. And I've had a number of songs on here that have been hits and fan favorites of bands that have been from an EP, not a full length. And 15, 20, you know, 30 years ago, that would have been so surprising that the song maybe you're most known for would be from an EP. But nowadays, as bands are releasing singles and whatnot, it's just kind of par for the course and what's happening.
I feel like for us, like the first record I ever made, it was like very important. Like there was like, I wanted there to be like an identity to the record. For me, it was like my first time in a studio, like a real studio. And there was all the romance of it and whatnot. And then I definitely had some crazy expectations for what was going to happen, you know? So I, you know, wrote, recorded, released the record, and then nothing happened. We're still like playing shitty shows and sleeping on floors and stuff. So then it's just at that point, you're just going back in the studio and just keep creating. And it's not as much about the packaging as it is just like, you know, getting the songs out and getting them out to people. So for me, it's just like, whether it's a full length or a single or an EP, it's like, what do we have right now? Like, how much music do we have to release to people?
And something I've never asked a band that does what you do in that reggae rock world, we'll call it. Have you ever felt like, because, you know, when I go and I'm from Florida, so I've seen every beach band in the world growing up. Okay. And typically you go see reggae bands and whatnot. You don't need to know the songs unless they're a completely awful band. You're just kind of listening and you're absorbing and you're really, most of the time, I find it enjoyable. Have you find it hard to break out of that? I don't know if that's a weird question or not, in terms of like, how do we get noticed? We're this band that, like, you know, almost kind of sounds like we're just kind of a beachy band in the background, but no, like, we're a national touring act. This is what we do.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, cause our whole thing has been DIY just like since the beginning, you know, it's all been self-funded and just like all of our buzz was created off of touring and whatnot. But social media was huge for me for getting noticed, like specifically when Facebook Live first became a thing in like 2015, live streaming in general, because like there wasn't a lot of money and all the money we had was getting like reinvested into, you know, studio time or van payments. And then, you know, there was nothing left over for marketing. So I was trying to find whatever free marketing I could do. So I would do little cover videos that I would put on YouTube. I threw a bunch of stuff at the wall to see what stuck. And one of the things that really helped was Facebook Live. Because like, you know, the first time I did it, I noticed I immediately had like 40 something people watching. So, you know, I would go on there, I'd play some songs for them. And I talk about our tour dates or I talk about whatever I had to promote. And I got to a point where I was treating it like a television show. Like I did it every Tuesday. So people could, you know, they would just tune in and they watch it. And, you know, it's one of the most consistent things I hear from people when I'm traveling is how much they appreciate the live streams. To answer your question, it led to like separating us from the herd.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at. Maybe I phrased that the long way a minute ago. But yeah, there are a lot of bands and you've seen the explosion in the for whatever reason, the last 10 years. OK, this whole subculture that really goes back all the way to Sublime and possibly even before, you know, the Wailers and different bands. And now it just seems like there's so much out there and that glut of what you were saying. It's like, how do we stick out? And it sounds like the Facebook Live thing was really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just. I hate that I'm about to use this example, but like one of my crew guys is like super into wrestling, just like so into wrestling. And he
one listens, of mine is too.
Yeah. So like he listens to the Jim Cornette podcast when we're driving a lot. And I've just by proximity, I've learned so much about wrestling. And I don't like it. I don't watch it, but I find the business side of it interesting. And one of the things they talk about is when they're finding their character, like the best characters are just their own person, like turned up to 11. So like their own personality, like turned up to 11. And I think there's a lot to be said about that, about being in a band and separating yourself from other bands, especially in the reggae rock genre or whatever you want to call it, any of this stuff where it's like, there's a lot of stereotypes that people kind of want to play into. It's like good vibes, beachy, fun time and shit. I mean, it's like, there's the stereotypes and stuff, but like what makes you different? And it's like the thing that makes you different is what makes you different as a human. So like, that's in my songwriting. All my songs come from like a very personal place, but I don't try to be like everyone else. Like we play the music that we play, but we do our own thing the way that we do it. And it makes us unique. And it means a lot of people don't like us, but like the people who do like us love us, you know, because there's only one of us. We're not like one of 15, you know, or whatever. Like we're just one of one.
Well, thanks for educating me a little bit about that. I guess that's what I was getting at. You know, I know the world that my band comes from, but, you know, from the outside looking in, it was interesting to hear you explain that. I guess the EP Buzz was produced by yourself and Howie. Is that correct?
Yeah, we started working with Howie on our Beast from the East record. And before that, everything was self-produced. And I got into this just wanting to be a songwriter. The studio game to me was like, you know, like our first few records, we just went in and did the best live version that we could of the songs, you know, and that was it. Like, I didn't know about doubling. I didn't even know what panning was. I think I made like three records before I knew what panning was. You know what I mean? Like, it was never anything that I cared about. Like, I wanted to be like Hank Williams or like Elliot Smith or some shit. You know what I mean? Working with Howie is what really elevated our recorded sound. And I started learning about like things from a sonic perspective. And yeah, it was huge for us. And Buzz was the second record we made with him.
Well, it sounds awesome. And it was mixed by Ryan Cullen. And I tried to look some things up with Ryan. It just looks like he's been there at the studio. It's called The Lab, I believe.
Annapolis Audio Lab.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And how did he come into play with that? Is he an old buddy or?
He's just, yeah, man. Like when I started doing all this shit, like right out of high school, I started waiting tables, and it was a drummer in a band that played at the bar that I worked at, and they would play every other Saturday night. And they were just like, the local rock stars. You know what I mean? It was like a cover band kind of thing, like doing classic rock covers. But I had, you know, I didn't really understand the music industry at all. Like, you know, like when I was growing up, I thought you either like played in like a nationally touring band or you just didn't play music. I didn't realize there was like a whole caliber of like working musicians, you know, that you could just make a living, like a humble living, you know, on a local scale. And that's one of the things that kind of inspired me to start my band was like, was this band. And, you know, as I started doing it, I would talk to Ryan and, you know, he told me how he had a studio, you know, and I honestly got really lucky because he's very accomplished at what he does and he's very talented. And I know a lot of guys who their first studio experiences are horror stories where it's like some guy with a Focusrite and he doesn't know what he's doing. And, you know,
yep. Been there.
Yeah.
Well, a couple more things before we dive into the track, Brandon. Your sixth record, Keep Your Suitcase Packed. This is really cool. It was released in June 2020 during the pandemic. And you guys released a single every month, which you called The Never Ending Drop. You were also part of a charity compilation, The House That Bradley Built, which honored Sublime's Bradley Noel and helped musicians with substance abuse. You covered Sublime's Same in the End. That's a really noble, awesome cause there.
Sun beats down from the sky. They give it up and they give it up and they give it up, but they never ask why. Daddy was a rolling, rolling stone. Oh, rolled away one day and he never came home. Ah, it ain't hard to understand.
And your seventh album, Mid-Atlantic Dub, came out on September 16th, 2022, which brings us up to this year, March of 2023, and the 311 Cruise.
Yep.
How'd that come about? And that wasn't your first one, was it?
It was, yeah.
It was. Okay, yeah. That was our second one. And what'd you think of that, man? That's just, it's so good.
It was fucking awesome, man. It was like, I mean, that's been a bucket list goal for a long time. I've literally been trying to get on that cruise for as long as I've been in a band. So it was powerful, man. It was a good experience. And I think we made a really good impression. It definitely felt like a milestone of sorts.
Right. And I, you know, when I was talking earlier, that long-winded question I posed to you, it's kind of like the cruise. You know, a band like yours goes out to 311's crowd and they're going to eat you guys up. You know, Less Than Jake's a little left of center. However, the fans that go on that cruise are some of the best fans of music I've ever seen. They just totally embraced us. I felt welcome from the first time we did it in 2013. I felt welcome coming back this time. It's just such a great thing.
I feel like their fans, they just appreciate music that's done well, and which is cool. Because I mean, like, you know, bands like you, bands like us, like, you know, we're kind of eclectic and do different things, but it's, you know, we do what we do well. And it's harder sometimes when you take that approach, I think, but it's cool when you find like genuine like music fans to play to and they just kind of run with it.
I've always loved that. I don't know if you felt this way, but I kind of like being the odd man out a little bit. You know, you kind of have something to prove. You're not going out there and preaching to the choir. And we find that a lot. We'll go, you know, we're getting ready to go play the Punk and Drublick, another festival with NOFX soon. It's like, you know, not many people are going to hate us there.
Yeah,
know, we're kind of all cut from the same cloth. But yeah, what a wonderful cruise to be part of. Can't say enough about the 311 cruise. But I do want to dive in to the song. And I got to say, you know, for you prefacing all this with, I don't really know what I'm doing in the studio and how he was the first time we multitracked, I'll say it again. This track sounds awesome.
Thanks, man. I feel really strongly about it. It was, and a lot of it, you know, like, until I started working with Howie, I could not sing harmonies to save my life. Like, he taught me how to like figure out how to do harmonies and shit. And it was, I'm a quick learner. Like, as soon as like I kind of figure stuff out, but I mean, I think that song sounds very large, and Howie was a big part of that for sure.
Do you remember writing Island Time, and was it specifically for the EP, or was it something that was held over?
No, I don't write like that. I'm just always writing, honestly. Like, More than anything, I'm a songwriter for sure. And I had that idea for that hook. We used to play these gigs down in the Virgin Islands. I mean, they're just these rowdy bar gigs where you're playing through like shitty gear that's been like just ruined by the salt water and whatnot. And it's just bar gigs and shit. But they were fun, you know. We used to crash with a dude down there. He would book the gigs and he would pick us up from the airport. And I remember the first time we got there, he was like 30 minutes late, and he had a cooler filled with beer in his pickup truck. And he cracks the beer and hands up. He's like, "Sorry, brother, I'm, you know, running late. Everyone's on island time down here." And I was like, "Damn, that's a good idea for a song." And I carried that with me for a while. But what I actually wrote the song about, my wife, she comes from a huge Greek family, right? And they immigrated to America 100 years ago. And when they did, they found this island off of the coast of Portland, Maine, called Peaks Island, that they fell in love with because it reminded them of Greece and all the islands out there. And her family, they've had a family cottage there for 100 years. So ever since I've started dating her, like when I started dating her, we would go up there for the summer. You know, her and her family, they would go up for 3 months, the entire summer when they're kids. And to this day, you know, she goes up there for a month. So, you know, it was part of the like kind of like the hazing period, you know, like when they, right. When they're bringing in boys or whatever, like, are they going to be okay with the island, you know? So it's just something we've always done. And the year that I wrote that song, I was up there and I broke my foot and they're all doing their shit. They're all like doing the vacation thing. And I'm sitting at the cottage and I have my guitar and I wrote most of the songs that were on the Buzz EP and a few others. I think I wrote like 10 songs that week just because I didn't have anything else to do. But one of the ways I write, I have like a note app where if I have like a hook idea, I just put it in there. When it's time to write, you know, I just like, I'll pick up the guitar and I'll find an idea and I'm like, okay, let's write about this, you know?
Do you hear the orchestrations in your head? Are you hearing the horns when you're just, you know, doing the basic guitar chords? You're just writing the song on the acoustic. Are you hearing other things at that point? Or, you know, how does the process work? Is it a, you know, Island Time was a title he had, it kind of inspired you, but are you hearing other things as you're creating the song?
Sometimes, it depends. I mean, like more often than not, I'm hearing like dynamics. You know, like I knew for sure, like that pre-chorus in that song is like super vibey and swelly. And it's because it has, you know, like arpeggiated guitar with delay on it. It has like big backing vocals. It has horns doing like sustained pad type things. It builds tension, you know, like I knew what I was doing there for sure with the pre-chorus. Like I wanted it to be this big tension building, beautiful thing that kind of led to the chorus, which was like Island Time, you know, like to me, that was like the payoff.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about the tension, because we're going to get to that when we start combing through this, because the part isn't tense in nature. I know what you mean by that. And when we get into it, I'll explain more. But it's interesting that you call the tension, that pre-chorus part. That's really cool. I do want to jump into the song. It's 4 minutes and 22 seconds. Got a 16 bar intro total. First 8 bars, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Brandon, there's a lot going on in this tune. I did my best to dissect it, but I do have some questions. It sounds like there's stereo upstroke guitars here, and I believe that is what's going on because I had Howie on recently, and I know he likes to do that, and I'm going to take a page out of his playbook with that and maybe do that on some Less Than Jake stuff because I think it's killer. I've never really done that. The way that they're laid out here, these guitars are very percussive, the way that they're played. It's awesome. There's also a single note guitar, another guitar playing a solo with what sounds like a wah pedal. There's keys here. I don't know if this was cowbells or a go-go bells, I call them. Do you know what a go-go bells are?
Oh, bro, I'm from Maryland, dude. Go-go is everything here. I'm very familiar with it. Yeah.
Okay, so you got the bells going here, and there's sporadic shaker as well. On bars 8 through 16, the drums and the bass come in. On bars 13 and 16, there's a vibra slap that is panned slight left. For the listeners that don't know what a vibra slap is, go listen to the intro of Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne, and you will hear a vibra slap. The intro here, and we're going to get to the pre-chorus in a second. Use the word tension. The intro, the verses, and the chorus are the same 4 chords. And that's why I asked you about the instrumentation. Okay. I love songs like this when you're looking at it through the microscope and you're looking down and going, whoa, what's separating this? It's just the pre-choruses until you get to the bridge.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's great. The instrumentation that's winding itself in and out, all the percussion that's happening, the keyboards, the interplay between those noodly guitars. It's killer.
Well, that's like a big part of reggae too. Cause like there's so much reggae that's just like a two chord song. And the whole reason it's interesting is because of the dynamic of bringing in and taking out instruments.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there also is a simplicity to it. Cause if you're thinking of the beach and vibey, it's not this big, busy thing. As you said, it's sometimes two chords, it's three chords. You're in that world, but it's what's floating in and out that makes the parts interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The first verse comes right off this 16 bar intro.
Sunrise, doggo snoring. Nothing to do today, but it ain't boring. Shoes on and I'm out the door. Take a run along a foggy shore.
And by the way, I love how the story goes here, kind of chronologically from morning to night. It's awesome. Sunrise, doggo snoring. Nothing to do today, but it ain't boring. Shoes on and I'm out the door. Take a run along a foggy shore. You were laid up, though. You couldn't run.
I couldn't, but that's like, and honestly, like a lot of what I wrote this song about, it wasn't even, I wrote it from my perspective, but I was kind of telling my wife and her cousins stories. You know, like I heard all these stories about them growing up and partying up there. Specifically, like the second verse is more into that. But we have this big 90-pound lab who's just like, just this huge fucking derp. And, you know, he's very lazy. And I don't know, like I find a lot of joy in just like watching him and like how happy he is. And that's like, to me, I think a lot of dog owners probably relate to that when they see the joy in their dog's faces. So like, that's kind of what I was going for with the doggo snoring thing. Like, you know, you wake up and you see your like sleeping dog and how happy he is. You're like, oh man, it's gonna be a good day. And my wife, she loves fog. She loves like rain and fog and everything. And that's like one of the things she would always romanticize about the island, is how like the fog horns are going off and all this other stuff. And she's also, you know, her and all her family and myself, we're all runners. So that's just like a big part of the kind of the lifestyle up there, is just, you know, going on a run.
Very cool. Well, we got the stereo upstroke guitars here in verse one, drums and bass. Keys are also playing upstrokes here. We got a güiro running underneath. Güiro? Güiro? For those that don't know what that is, it's basically a stick on a wooden instrument that has slats in it that you scrape it along. Sounds like that güiro right there. And this is what I had here in my notes, Brent. I love about this first verse. You're talking about that dog snoring. I really thought you had a sample of a snore buried when I first listened to the track. It's that güiro running through there.
Doggo snoring.
Funny thing about all the percussion on this song, that's all Ryan, the mixing engineer. In addition to being a drummer,
really,
he's a percussion player. And that's just something he would do, you know, if he thought the song called for it. He would just, you know, smoke a joint and fucking set up a bunch of microphones at his house and just do the percussion.
Did anybody mention that sound like a dog snore? Did anybody else say that? Your fans or anybody?
I've never heard that, but I'm never going to unhear it now.
It made me chuckle to where I had to rewind it, and I kept listening to him going, that's genius that they did it on purpose. And even if you didn't do it on purpose, it's still awesome.
I'll have to ask Ryan. He might have done that. And no, maybe you're just the first person to catch that.
No, it's cool. There's two other guitars here, pan left and pan right. And they're kind of just noodling around. And there's also the bells are here again, as well as claves, which are also kind of like wooden sticks. Do you recall Ryan playing those at all?
I wasn't even there, honestly. Like, he just, it was one of
those. You weren't there. Okay.
No, he just sent me the mix and I was like, damn, okay, that's a lot. But it, you know, and it grows on you.
I'm hearing bongos here as well.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Were any of those laying around the studio? He could have played those?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he has all the shit.
Like I said, I had to listen to this one a bunch. There is a lot going on here, and what he brings to the table with the percussion is awesome. That's really cool that he did that. And sometimes it sounds like he's so good, you just trusted him to do it. I wasn't even there because you just know he's going to kill it.
Once again, it's just something I never really thought about. And then, you know, at this point, I have a percussion player in the band because, like, you know, it's like 6-7 years later and I realize how much it fills out the groove. But at that point, it was just like, you know, he kind of asked, he was like, what do you think about me taking a pass at some percussion stuff? And then you hear it and you're like, damn, this like fills out the track so well, you know, it just fills all the little spaces and complements the groove of it, makes it bouncier.
Well, speaking about filling in the track, when this tambourine comes in pre-chorus one, it just makes it move. Just the simplicity of that tambourine shaking along. Not that the song felt like it was laborious or just, you know, not going anywhere. I don't mean it like that, but it just really moves this part. You know, it didn't speed up, but it feels like there's some urgency, or what you said earlier, tension here. We get harmonies on every line here, but the harmonies are really subtle. They're not like in your face, super loud. They're just very, very chill.
Pot of coffee, fill my cup, pack a bowl and spark it up. Take a bike out to the rock, swim until my legs are shot. These are the days.
Pot of coffee, fill my cup, pack a bowl and spark it up. Take a bike out to the rock, swim until my legs are shot. These are the days.
The pot of coffee line. I mean, once again, like the whole thing I was going with this song was I just wanted to like romanticize vacation essentially. And like, you know, that's like what island time is for a lot of people. It's just like being detached from reality. So I was kind of just trying to find different pieces of like happiness that people can relate to. And I mean, for me, like coffee is life, you know, like, like it's definitely the start of a good day. You gotta have it. That's, you know, I think that's just like kind of like the start of a good morning. You know, you got your cup of coffee, you got your morning bowl. The beach for them, because it's on an island, it's not an actual a beach. It's like a collection of rocks where they will all go and set up towels and like bring coolers out. And, you know, they grill out on the rock and whatever and go swimming in the water. So like, you know, take a bike out to the rock is like the spot where the, you know, the kind of like the meetup spot.
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Brandon Hardesty coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
To all the guys out there listening, we all know first impressions matter. And if you're not taking care of your skin, people are going to notice. They'll either think you're way older than you are, or that you just don't care about your appearance. Well, show them you do and make a great first impression with Caldera Lab. I try to make skincare an important part of my everyday routine, just like brushing my teeth and flossing and styling my hair. It's just as easy and sometimes even quicker with Caldera Lab. Caldera Lab creates high-performance men's skincare products, and the regimen leads off their product lineup, a twice-a-day routine to transform your skin. Skincare has been the Wild West for men for years. That's why they've made the solution simple. It's three products. The Clean Slate, which is a face wash to start and end your day. The Base Layer, which is a daily moisturizer to hydrate your skin. And the Good, which is a go-to multifunctional serum that helps your skin look tighter and smoother. They also have the Icon Eye Serum, which addresses the three most common skin concerns around the eye. Fine lines, dark circles, and puffiness. 1 minute in the morning and at night is all it takes to reduce your skin wrinkles, fine lines, and signs of aging. Clinical trials have found that 94% of men's skin showed an overall younger-looking appearance after using Caldera Lab for a few weeks. So now is the time to see what it can do for you. We have an exclusive offer for Krista Makes a Podcast listeners, and it's the best offer available anywhere. Use the code DEMAKES at CalderaLab.com and get 20% off right now. Get 20% off with code DEMAKES at CalderaLab.com and make unforgettable first impressions that lead to the confidence you deserve. That's 20% off at CalderaLab.com with code DEMAKES. You'll be glad you did.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
And now, back to the show.
Of course, if you're from Florida or Southern California, you can do this type of lifestyle all year long. But Annapolis, Maryland gets cold. I've been there. So I guess you're touring now a lot. So you're getting that itch to go play and you're getting to warmer weather. But was there ever a thought as a band? I never even thought to ask this to any other bands, the kind of band that you are, of like, hey, we got to get somewhere warmer for this kind of music we're playing, because we can't go to the rocks in December.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, for me, like I said, like our whole thing, we've been on that DIY shit forever. Like we just, you know, we haven't done like a lot of support tours. We just headline, you know, that's kind of always been our thing. So like, as soon as I realized that was kind of our situation, is that we're headlining indefinitely, we just go where the weather's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I always try to stay out of Canada in January and February as much as I can.
Oh my God. Yeah. Fuck that. My agent one time tried to send me to the upper Midwest in January, and I was just like, you're out of your element, Donnie. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
well, I also, in my notes here, Brand, I put that the horns are subtle here, and I'm definitely hearing sax and trumpet. Is there a trombone here as well?
No, it's just trumpet and sax.
It is just trumpet and sax. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm also hearing, and again, very subtle, at least in pre-chorus one here, there's these oohs, these yep. backing vocals that are harmonized. They're killer, but they're almost inaudible, at least on this first pre-chorus. When we get to the second one, we'll talk about that. I'm not sure if you're even aware about what I'm going to say, but I swear they're louder in the second pass. But anyway, here on the first one, how the horns and how the backing vocals are layered in there, it's awesome. Spark it up, take a bike out to the rock,
swim until my legs are shot. Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I'm talking about with like the tension thing for me. It's like just like layering. It's just like a lot of different layering to kind of like hit you in the face and like really be this huge sonic punch in the face, really. But like that's not offensive, you know. It's like melodic and pretty and big, but it's like, you know, it's all just building. And the chord progression too, I think, complements that a lot. Where it's the progression is like, there's not a lot of resolution to it. It's constantly building, and it's like it's building towards the chorus where there's the like release of this huge sonic kind of thing, and you get back to the more groove kind of focus thing, if that makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense. And there is a release here for the chorus. Typically, the, you know, I say typically, a lot of times the chorus is just going to lift. It's going to be the biggest part of the song. I almost feel like the pre-chorus here is your chorus. And first time through, I'm like, oh, wow, you know, because it really does lift there, but it does come back down for chorus one. And we're going to get into chorus one right now. Put me back on island time. I need that state of mind. Everything slow. Put me back on island time. We can't ignore the grind. Island time, but we take it slow. Oh. You know, it's interesting where the downbeat is of the chorus. And until I started doing this songwriting podcast, I never ever would have thought of something like this. But, you know, the lyric of a chorus can start right on the downbeat, like bang, we're in. It can start after it, where the downbeat comes in and then you start a lyric, you know, a second or two after. In this case, put me back on comes in kind of still in the pre-chorus when you say that first lyric of the chorus, and it hits on the I in island time, if that makes sense. The one of the chorus hits there, but you're singing before it.
I never even realized that, but I feel like with my songwriting, I do a lot of pickups like that lyrically. I don't know how it is for you, but yeah, it's not even like an intentional thing. It's just kind of like how I talk, I guess. Or
well, it's just sometimes how it happens. You know, you look at We Will Rock You by Queen, that's right on the one, you know, but sometimes it's before, sometimes it's after. And it's fascinating how that happens. And we don't even think about it. I'm cognizant of it now, but I've never thought about it before. But I like how that put me back on, that vocal comes in before we're actually in the chorus of Island Time. And the lyric is, put me back on Island Time. I need that state of mind. Island Time, where everything's slow. Put me back on Island Time. We can ignore the grind. Island Time, where we take it slow. Oh.
You know, now that I think about it, like I said, I had the idea for this song. Like, I was like, Island Time, that's a hook. Like, that's a good, catchy reggae hook. So I think what I probably did is, you know, you can't just say Island Time by itself. It needs something to like, why, what the fuck are you talking about with Island Time? So like the put me back is like the qualifier, you know, but at the same time, you want the Island Time to be like the hook, you know what I mean? So it's like, it makes sense that that would be on the one, but you need to put me back to get you there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And you know, what's the chorus and what's the verse here? Really? They're both the same progressions. I almost feel like, you know, that they could be intertwined. What's separating them is that pre-chorus. And I really love, again, what that does to both of these parts, because this chorus, chorus one, is a release, as you said. You know, it kind of comes out of that part. It sounds like the keys are playing upstrokes here. All the other percussion elements are here in the chorus that we've spoke about. The backing vocals are loose, but super vibey. You know, they don't sound like they're locked up perfect, but that's not what you want here, in my opinion. You want it to be like, it sounds like a live band. And, you know, you mentioned your earlier recordings were just trying to get the best live performance that you could. But there still sounds like there's some of that going on here. It's not super lined up. Was that intentional?
It was not. No, that was just where we were at in the production journey. You know, I remember like this song drove me crazy, because I knew like how much potential it had. And I was trying to get that chorus to hit. Once again, like I was not good at doing harmonies at all until I started working with Howie. And this was like around, you know, the first record, Beast from the East, was like pulling fucking teeth, getting like, he had to Melodyne the shit out of me to get the harmonies to be right, because I just couldn't get my brain wrapped around it. And it really started clicking here. And I remember really struggling with the harmonies on this chorus, like knowing it needed harmonies, but just not really figuring out what to do. And that's just kind of where I landed. The other thing too, to like separate it from the rest of the song, is that like that really verbed out trumpet, you know, doing like the melodic line during the chorus.
Yes.
That's where I landed, but I knew it needed something to separate it from the verse. And that's kind of where we landed. It's not a very like big part or like moving part, but I think it adds so much for just like filling out the sound, you know, and just kind of being an additional hook, you know, like separating it from the verse, really.
Well, yeah, the horns are killer here. And I wrote, they have a lot of distance in the mix. I love where they sit, that trumpet with it's kind of verbed out. It's almost like a sleepy vibe. It's so chill, but it is another hook. We're also getting backing vocals on line one on Island Time. Line two, we get the whole thing. I need that state of mind. Line three, Island Time. You get Island Time on the fourth line, ignore the grind on the fifth, and nothing at the back end there of the chorus. There's no harmonies there. How did that come about? Was that Ryan telling you or Howie in the studio, hey, try this? Or because it sounds like pre-chorus one, there was harmonies on everything, albeit they were very subtle. But you didn't mention that was kind of difficult doing those harmonies. Why the chorus?
So what happened was, when I tracked these vocals, I did the pre-chorus with Howie, and then we finished tracking, and I wasn't happy with the chorus. And you know, like Howie lives about an hour and a half away from most. Ryan is in Annapolis where I live. So like we're mixing the record and I'm just like losing my mind because the chorus isn't hitting the way I want to do it. So I'm just like just over and over in Ryan's studio, just trying different like harmony ideas, trying to get something that like that made it. And eventually that's where we landed. Whereas like, you know, I'm listening back and I'm like, okay, that sounds, I don't know if you get like that, but like sometimes, you know, you're like, you're listening to it, you're like, this just doesn't sound like a chorus to me yet, you know?
Yes.
Like, I feel like a chorus just, it has like this certain sound to it where it's like, I'm the fucking chorus. You know what I mean? Like it needs to like, there needs to be no question that this is like the chorus of the song to me, you know?
Gotcha. Right after chorus one, we go into an 8-bar reintro. And at the end of this, right on the word sunset for verse two. There's a really great tremolo on the guitar effect there. It's really cool. That ushers in verse two.
Sunset, hit the cottage to clean up. Crack open a bottle of the hard stuff. Pre-game, then we're out the door. Start a fire on a moonlit shore.
Sunset, hit the cottage to clean up. Crack open a bottle of the hard stuff. Pre-game, then we're out the door. Start a fire on a moonlit shore.
This is kind of what I'm talking about when I was saying I was borrowing from my wife's experiences. For them, like growing up, that was like where they kind of like experimented with like, you know, drugs and alcohol and all that stuff. And that's like what they would do is they would sneak out to this rock, like this little like beach spot that they hung out at during the day, you know, and they would take whatever booze they could get, whatever kind of weed they had or whatever. And they would just go get fucked up, you know, and then come back. And I thought that, you know, and that was like, you know, you mentioned earlier how it's like the day into the night, like that was like a very conscious decision. I was like, okay, verse one's going to be daytime, like a really good daytime on vacation. And then verse two is going to be like a really good nighttime on vacation. So I borrowed from those experiences to kind of put that together.
Yeah, I love that. And I wrote here, and we'll get to it in a second, but pre-chorus two, the lyrics had to be different. Because you couldn't copy and paste pre-chorus one. And again, I think that for me is what almost makes this, you know, typically a chorus has the same lyrics, I know, but the pre-choruses in this song are almost a chorus in and of themselves, just because of how they hit me when I'm listening to it. Verse two gets really moody. Those stereo guitar upstrokes are not here on verse two. It's just bass, drums. I'm hearing the bongos. There's a güiro on stuff. That's that stick noise that you're hearing after the word stuff here. And then I don't know what keyboard was used here. It sounds like a Rhodes on the line pregame and we're out the door. It's a very sparkly key that comes in. It's a new sound.
Pregame, then we're out the door.
It's awesome. It really, really changes the whole vibe of the song when that comes in.
Yeah, it's definitely an electric piano. I don't remember if it was a Rhodes or Whirly.
Yeah, I love that. And then those keys are kind of hitting those chords on pregame, on door, on start, and on moon, as well as a noodly guitar comes in on lines 3 and 4 here, mimicking the bass guitar. And that's the only time in the song that really happens, when those guitars are following it. I think that's awesome. And do you recall, was that something that, hey, you're in the studio and Howie's like, hey, we should run a couple guitars up this way? Or is that something you thought of? How'd that happen?
That's Howie's bread and butter right there. It's called a sticky. It's a big thing in reggae, and it's just a cool way to like move along the song, is having an electric guitar double the bass line. And this is kind of like what we were talking about earlier, as far as like dynamics in reggae and like moving it along. It's just like a cool way to move along the song. It's just, you know, it's obviously it's verse two, but it's not the same orchestration as verse one, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I love what happens here in verse two. It kind of breaks down. We get into pre-chorus two right off of verse two.
Sing as the ocean crashes, call the crew and hit the bar, or fall asleep while counting stars. These are the nights. Put me back on.
Crack a beer and throw it back. Listen as the ocean crashes. Call the crew and hit the bar, or fall asleep while counting stars. These are the nights.
My wife gives me shit about this all the time, because like I'm like so ADD. Like you will never catch me in my life like falling asleep like looking at stars. It's just it's boring to me. But like my wife loves that shit, you know, and she's told me so many stories of that. So it's like I was trying to romanticize. I think a big part of like songwriting is just like romanticizing ideas. So
it sounds like you were channeling a lot of her experiences.
That, I mean, that's absolutely what it was. It's like this place was so special to her and her family. And she told me all these stories about it, you know, and yeah, I really just kind of relayed that into the song. You know, I threw a little bit of my own stuff in there, like my own taste and flavor. But really what I'm trying to go for anytime I write a song is like, you have the idea that you're writing, but you want other people to feel it, you know? So like, how are you going to convey that? And I think, putting out ideas that are kind of like universally connectable is good, you know? So I took the things that meant the most to her and tried to use that for the lyrics. So, you know, that's really what that all is. It's just the, you know, the different options that you have in the night, you know, like how, but the, and they're all good options, but it's like, it's almost like the freedom to do whatever you want to is the beauty in itself. Like, that makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, pre-chorus 2 is the same instrumentation pretty much as pre-chorus 1. But as I mentioned earlier, did you ever notice that those oohs, those backing vocals, they sound like they're a dB or two higher here in pre-chorus 2, or am I just hearing things?
I never noticed that, but I wouldn't put it past, I mean, it would make sense. That would be a cool mixing technique.
I'm telling you, ABM, if you're bored one night and you're tired of counting stars, and tell me if you hear it, because I'm telling you, it's louder there in pre-chorus too. I love that those backing oohs are haunting. They're so subtle, you know, and I, the fact, maybe I knew they were coming for pre-chorus 2 in all fairness, and maybe that's why my ear picked up and heard them a little louder. I don't know, but I swear they're louder. And again, on pre-chorus 2, we get harmonies on each line, taking us right into chorus 2.
Put me back on island side, I need that state of mind. Island side, where everything's slow. Put me back on island side, we can't ignore the crime. Island side, where we take it slow. Oh,
same instrumentation and lyrics as chorus 1. And I gotta ask, now that we're here at chorus 2, was there any thought, and there is a lot lyrically going on here, information wise, imagery wise, was there a thought of maybe changing up a word or two, or were you just like, no, this is going to stay the same lyric wise?
No, it always had to stay the same. I think the last chorus, I changed up the phrasing of the last of the O's or something, and that was very intentional. It was like a sense of finality.
Right.
I feel like if you're going to change a chorus, it needs to be super fucking intentional. And it's like, it almost makes it like, I don't know, it makes it less catchy. You know what I mean? So you really have to have an idea here. And I just thought, the island time idea was such a strong hook. I didn't want to get weird with it. You know, I really wanted that chorus to be a chorus that like lives in your brain forever.
I think you made the right decision. We get a 16 bar bridge off of chorus 2 here. And, you know, the drum pattern is still in that same world of the chorus, but we get a chord change. We get some chord changes here. The progression changes from the rest of the song. So this is the one part, in addition to the pre-choruses, that are different chords from the rest of the hook, the rest of the song.
Oh, only the alarm clock that's ringing is the far chord that's singing through me. Only thing I am planning is a nap in the hammock at 3. Savor the scene, cause we're living the dream till it's back to reality. Put me back on.
Only alarm clock that's ringing is the foghorn that's singing to me. Only thing I am planning is a nap in the hammock at 3. Savor the scene because we're living the dream till it's back to reality.
So for this, it's like the rest of the song is a story, essentially. And this is like kind of the cliff notes. You know, it's like if Morgan Freeman is narrating this song, you know.
You know, that is awesome that you just told me that, because that's something that I did not pick out. And if there's 4 lines in the song that sum it up, it's these lines, because that kind of sums up every great vacation. You're out there living the dream. You're hearing the waves crash. Someone's bringing you another drink. You know, the birds are chirping. It's a beautiful day. But at some point, it's back to reality. It's back to the grind, right?
Yep.
When everything comes to a screeching halt, you get harmonies on all 3 lines here until till it's back to reality. There's no harmony there. Again, the harmonies here are pretty subtle. The horn melody here is killer. It's like staccato horn stabs that are happening on the first two lines. On the line, savor the scene because we're living the dream. The horns open up here. And then the guitar gets a bit growly on the last line. Really digs in here, those chords, and it kind of growls and swells up. And puts us into chorus three, which we break right back down. This is definitely a release here because on the first line, we get just guitar, vocals, and a little bit of percussion.
Put me back on island time. I need that state of mind. Island time, where everything's slow. Put me back on island time. We can't ignore the grind. Island time, but we take it slow. Oh, oh.
The rest of chorus three is basically the same. Something interesting, though. On the line, ignore the grind in the back half. There's no harmony there. Was that intentional?
That was probably me just not being able to come up with a harmony.
Okay, because it is on the other two choruses. That's why I asked.
Yeah, I don't even remember at this point, but...
Okay. Yeah, sometimes we didn't want it there. We wanted to leave it off. We wanted to, you know, kind of fool the ear of the listener or something. And sometimes it's like, I don't know. I don't know why there wasn't a harmony there. I can go back to our records. I'm going, why did we do that the first two times? Didn't do it. If anything, we shouldn't have done it the first two times and done it the last time for some more ear candy. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. And then the OO is twice here. And you, as you mentioned a little bit ago, you get a little bit of different phrasing. And then we get a 16-bar outro. Because you can, with this song and this kind of music, you can just kind of let it go. A new clean guitar sound comes in here with a solo. The solo, again, is a new sound. It's super beachy, almost surf rock, the solo that comes in. It's not really the wah sound that you get at the top of the song. I think it's killer. As well as all the aforementioned instruments are in here. The one last thing, Brandon, before we end the discussion here of talking about the song, the horns sound less processed here than they do the rest of the song. Do you hear that?
I've never noticed it, but now I'm gonna have to revisit that.
Yeah, they really do. They sound way more natural. Like there's not a lot of effects and stuff on them, especially on the very end fade out of the horn. You get that sax off left and it just, maybe the stuff was cut by that point, the effects or something.
You know,
they sound very, very natural.
I bet that's because they're not really doing like a lot of rhythm shit in the rest of the song. Like I feel like the horns are the most prominent during the pre-chorus, which the whole vibe of that is supposed to be like ethereal. And then there's the bridge. Which, I mean, they're kind of, yeah, they're staccato there and rhythmic, but I mean, it's still, that's kind of like a vibey spot. And then the chorus where there's the trumpet and it's super fucking processed. So, I mean, yeah, that could have been like an intentional thing to keep them cleaner because it's just more of an open rhythmic spot for them.
Well, I love it. I love the mix on this track. There's a lot going on. You know, you take the song for face value, just like, oh, okay, this is kind of a simple rock song. When I got into this thing, I was like, wow, this there's a lot of things floating in and out. And before we break here, I have to ask you, you got a lot of great songs. I've been listening to your stuff the past couple of days. What is it to you why this song has resonated so well with your fan base?
We're in this like American reggae space that just has a huge audience right now. And this song is like very much like in that vibe. Like it's in that world that's appealing. That whole world is like kind of just about like relaxation and kind of, you know, like being on vacation, you know, and that's like what this song is about is vacation, you know. And I purposefully, like when I knew like if the song had potential you know, I took the Moneymaker chord progression. You know, you can only do it like once or twice a record, which is like 1-4-6-5, you know, like,
yeah,
like I was like looking at I'm Yours by Jason Mraz and kind of trying to like use that as like a starting point. But it, you know, it's like it was set up for success. It's a good idea. Like the song, it's a good hook idea. It was recorded well. It's like the music is not super hard to digest and it's pleasant, but like not boring. You know, it keeps you interesting. I think it just had all the elements for success, and then it went over well. You know, we got kind of lucky.
Heck yeah. Well, that was a great way to sum it up. And before we break, what's going on with Bumpin' Uglies? What do you guys got coming up?
Ah, man, I'm leaving tomorrow for like 3 months.
Calm before the storm.
Yeah. So we're flying out to Montana. We're touring all fall with the Expendables, and it's two legs. So we got the first leg starts this week. Then we have like 2 or 3 weeks off where we're doing a festival out in Ohio and then Reggae Rise Up in Las Vegas. And then we start the second leg in Tulsa towards the middle of October.
Right on. Well, tell Raul and those guys in Expendables I said hello.
I will, for sure.
The party doesn't start till the Wild Girls show. Pocket full of Dutchess twisted up with the drill. Handle full of Captain, baggy full of blow. It's about to turn up. If you know, then you know. Go!
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Brandon Hardesty. But the party is not over yet. There's lots more Krista Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Well, hey, friends. My name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good
morning. I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Only on Weekends, a pop-punk rock and roll band from the New Jersey, Philadelphia area, featuring Harry Rose on vocals and guitar, Jim Neal on guitar and vocals, John Devine on bass, and Anthony D'Andrea on drums. You can find their music on all the streaming platforms. Here's a snippet of their song, Answers.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
Chris, I'm ready to take a vacation. It's been a few years for me. When's the last time you went on an actual vacation? I know you're always traveling, but when's the last time you took a proper vacation?
I hate vacations. And only because I travel so much and I'm the luckiest SOB in the world. I find myself on a beach a lot of times, or I find myself in a mountainous area and I can pull up a chair and I can kick back and listen to some music. So those are my vacations. I'm very lucky. The thought of planning a vacation makes my palms sweaty. Like, gotta get the hotel, gotta go here, gotta get the RV. Like, no, I'm not that guy, but yeah. Yourself?
You don't have a tour manager to do that for you when when you're taking a personal vacation. I'm kind of the same way. I don't take a lot of vacations. But that being said, you could put on a song like this and escape away, at least in your mind,
for 3 or 4 minutes, right?
There you go. You know, this type of reggae rock, and it is probably the most popular it's ever been, definitely in the United States. But, you know, and that's why I had asked Brandon early on in the conversation, and it was kind of long-winded. I don't know if I phrased it that well, but I was just trying to say, how do you stand out? How do you get across the point that we're not just another feel-good band playing in the shadows? And I say that with a ton of admiration and respect for the bands that are doing this. You know, I'm envious of it of sorts, because I look at it and like, you're watching this band play. You don't have to know their songs, know a thing about them, a lot of them. And if they're good musicians, they're singing in key and you know, you can listen and have a great time with it. How do you get noticed with the glut? And this band has worked tremendously hard the last 10 years to get noticed. He mentioned Facebook Live. I thought that was very interesting, Chris.
Yeah. I mean, getting out there in front of people anyway, you can do it, even if it's virtually. And a big thing about reggae is setting a vibe, which Bumpin' Uglies definitely does. And these guys are crazy productive. They have released so much music over the course of their band. Sometimes, you know, in my own experience, sometimes we'll have a couple years break between album releases, and these guys have just been nonstop. And I think, you know, just from an outsider looking in, that seems to be a big point in their corner as well.
Yeah, he kept, you know, mentioning DIY, doing everything themselves. And there's something to be said about that. You know, you can really build a loyal, strong fan base by doing that. And, you know, I typically ask the guest, you know, point blank, what is it about this song? And he basically summed it up. It's just, it's real lyrics. It's sung with conviction. It's a lyric that came from the heart. And it was basically written about, you know, his wife's experiences through him. It's pretty cool.
Right. And like I said earlier, this song kind of takes you to a place. Literally, it sets the scene in the lyrics of where you're at. He talked about how his wife likes to romanticize the fog, and he does that in the lyrics. You feel like you're there when you listen to this song, even down to seeing the dog snoring. And he talked about how that makes him happy, and how when he sees that, he thinks, oh man, it's going to be a good day. I feel the same, you know, with my pets. If I wake up and I see my cats and I'm like, oh man, they look so cute laying there sleeping next to me, I might lay for a few more minutes. So I can definitely relate to that. I love mentioning a good pet in a song every once in a while. And he also mentioned having a producer who added lots of percussive elements to the song, which is very, very cool. In Punchline, our drummer Corey goes nuts with it. He goes crazy with it. He lays down so much stuff to the point where he's like, hey, I'm just putting everything in here. This is over the top, but the mixer can make decisions of what to use and what not to use. But man, those percussive elements add so much, just like they do in this song.
Well, yeah, you said it all. I mean, Ryan Cullen, who mixed and recorded the track, he played the percussion of this, and the song just would not be the same without it, Chris. And I can't recall, I know we've done songs with pretty heavy percussion, and I don't recall ever saying this, though. You know, this song definitely would not be the same without it. It just wouldn't be the same track.
Just like he said, it complements the groove.
Mm-hmm.
It does what it's supposed to do, and it just makes you feel it all the more. I love anything like that. It's funny. I talked about how, you know, the drummer in my band will do that. I actually like it when everything is in there. Now, I know that's over the top and too much, and that the mixer makes it more tasteful. Personally, I like the kitchen sink when it comes to those percussive elements. Sometimes I miss them when they're gone, when it's the actual mix.
Yeah, and it sounded like he wasn't even there when Ryan recorded these parts. You kind of just trust him. He's just so good to do it. And the spots he put this stuff in, very tasteful. At the same time, it wasn't cookie cutter. You could tell he wasn't copying and pasting this from another section of the song. It was on the fly. And I like the sporadicness of that. I like that, you know, and that was what took me so long to comb through this track, was there was a lot of stuff going on, mostly coming from the percussion.
Yeah. This episode really inspired me to take a little bit, maybe even just half an hour of island time today, even if it's just sitting here in my office. I need to take a little break every once in a while and relax. And if any listeners out there need a little break to relax, maybe you want to check out the After Party podcast, which is the podcast that Chris and I do together each week. It's a bonus episode for members of our supporting cast, which is like a Patreon, but we call it supporting cast. You can go to chrisdemakes.com and sign up. And Chris, Chris, did you like that segue into my plug for the supporting cast?
You know, 3 years and counting, Chris, and you still amaze me with how you segue.
Flawless.
Chris Segue Fafalius, ladies and gentlemen. And yeah, head over to KristaMakes.com. We'd love to have you be part of our Patreon that we call Supporting Cast. KristaMakes.com. Find out all about it over there. Give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChristy and give Chris a follow on Instagram at Chris Fafalius. I had an enjoyable time breaking down this song. I think if there ever was a time in my life for a vacation, it'd be right now. I might take some island time.
Hell yeah, man. You deserve it.
Right on. I want to thank this week's guest, Brandon Hardesty from Bumpin' Uglies, for sitting with us, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Chris to Makes a Podcast producer, Chris Fafalius. Will you do me a favor real quick? Go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe to One Hit Thunder. It's the show that I host with my good buddy, Matt Kelly, where we have guests from the world of music and comedy and art, and together we dive deep into a band or artist that people consider a one-hit wonder and decide if they brought the thunder or were just a blunder. You'll laugh, you'll learn, maybe you'll get mad at us. Who knows? We have an enormous back catalog that includes episodes about Eagle Eye Cherry, Stacey Q, Looking Glass, The Weather Girls, Tag Team, Four Non-Blondes, Martika, Krayshawn, Sixpence None the Richer. I could go on and on, but how about you just subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods and experience the fun for yourself.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.